name is James Scott. I'm a veterinarian. I came to Alaska in 1960. I started an organization called the Bird Treatment and Learning Center, and I was here at the time of the oil spill, and I'm supposed to talk to you about those times. When the oil spill hit, I was in Hawaii. I've had 28 major surgeries, and that was my first one, and after I got over it, I went to Hawaii, and I got a phone call from one of the doctors at my animal hospital, and he said, "Jim, you got to get home. We've had an oil spill." And he said, "It's just terrible, and there are all kinds of animals that need help." Hello. Haven't seen you for a long time. The young lady right there. Yeah. A long time. Any case, it was a situation where everything was on 24/7 on the thing, because it was and still is the largest oil spill that North America has ever had. What happens in an oil spill? Well, you can't think of anything bad that didn't happen during an oil spill. Soon, Dr. Wilson, who's an absolute wonderful veterinarian, he has his own practice here and has for many years, but he was working for me at that time, and he called and said, "Boss, I'm leaving to go to the Sound." And one of my technicians said, "Yes, and I'm going with him, and we need to take this and this and this, all kinds of things from the hospital." And so I said, "Take it, and I'll be home as soon as I can get a plane." So I got home, and the office turned into a MASH operation, the program on TV, MASH. Because as they went through the Sound, it was just absolutely the worst kind of circumstance you could ever imagine. You'd see these animals and birds flopping along with oil all over them, and at that time, no one really realized how to take the oil off of all of these. Okay, you use a detergent. Okay, what kind? Well, it evolved into the fact that they found a good detergent. They started washing, and for instance, a sea otter takes about 5 or 6, at least then it did, maybe they've got better techniques now, 5 or 6 washing with a short time in between to get the fur clean. A sea otter has a very special kind of fur. Underneath, it's super downy. It is very, very thick. And then the guard hairs are on top of that. And when he goes down and brings up a clam and has a little rock that he puts on his chest and pounds the clam against it, the hairs that are protecting his body are the long, sort of bristly hairs. They aren't really hard or anything. But the soft hair has to be cleaned very carefully every single time, because it's what keeps the water from getting to his skin and then hypothermia developing if it were to get to his skin. The baby otters don't have to dive. They have to float around until mom or dad come up to feed them. Well, there were all kinds of otters, and we didn't know how to deal with the oil in the beginning. And I've always treated all kinds of wild animals. The first birds that I treated, some eagles and so forth, I wasn't even aware that it was against the law for me to try and make them well. And so I had an undercover agent that came and checked me out for 2 or 3 years to find out if I was doing the right thing. And evidently I was, because I'm not in jail. So the spill continued to give horrendous problems. And so as the various things came through the office, it turned out that they didn't have anybody that was taking care of birds. and primarily eagles. Now, as you go down the coast, you can do a survey, and it's easy enough to tell where there are eagles in a normal time, because the nests are easily spotted if you're in a helicopter or even in a scuba tub or something like that. And after the spill was concerned, they had groups that went along trying to check for eagles under those nests, and quite often they would just find oil tracks to the bottom, and there'd be some remains of an eagle. And I'm here, Beth. The situation that you got into at that time was you had to find some way to get the oil off of whatever you dealt with. And it was a 24/7 kind of situation. The first 4 days that I got back from Hawaii, I was on a much shorter stick. Although I got this stick in order to make it, I had to get it to Hawaii. The problem was that we didn't know what was needed to clean all different kinds of things, feathers and fur and different kinds of fur and so forth. And as I mentioned, we found out from trial and error, and a detergent that's been around a long time turned out to be the best. How many of you use Dawn for anything? Well, if you ever get an otter that's all oiled up, you better use that. Because it turns out to be the best washable product. It cuts the oil very, very well, and it rinses out very, very well. And that's really important. Why do you suppose that's so important? Any hands? Well, okay.
So the otter doesn't clean, first off, and adjust to...
Well, that's one reason, but the main reason is if you still have soap on that downy, downy fur and they go into the water, they're instantly wet. So you have to get it out of there. That means you can't have, you can't use Tide or something like that either. But the reason is you've got to get it out of the hair. Well, it wasn't long before we got a call, and they said, we have, I think it was around 20 eagles that are coming in all levels of oil coverage. I had a fairly large veterinary clinic at that time over on Tudor, and so in the back room, pretty soon, there wasn't room for dogs and cats and so forth. I had eagles and hawks and owls and seals and otter and so forth, and we were just going nuts. And of course, for me, that was a short trip, so it wasn't too bad. But in any case, we had to learn what the best thing to take oil off of all different kinds of animals. And it wasn't like if you went out and you changed the tire and got a bunch of grease and stuff on you. You're one animal to take care of that. But if you had 15 kinds of animals, some with feathers and some with specialized fur, it was a whole different ball of wax. So everybody was learning, 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 learning. So when we got through, and of course there's thousands of gallons of crud out in the beaches, and by the way, if you go down on those beaches and you dig down today, 20 years later, you dig down 18, 20 inches, and you're going to find oil on many, many of those beaches.
Question. In World War II, a number of tankers were sunk in the Gulf of Mexico. How far down do you dig down to find oil?
I'm sorry?
How far down do you dig into the Gulf of Mexico to find the oil from all the sunken tankers you were sent in World War II?
I couldn't tell you, but I'll bet you... Who could?
Yes, sir.
Somebody had been there.
U.S. Navy.
Better ask them.
Why don't we compare what happened there? I mean, there was no big complaint about environment in World War II, the main cause, but where it is right now. The number one economic product from the state, which is petroleum.
Well, I'm not arguing with that because I'm a veterinarian and I don't deal with that.
I'm a physician. I deal with the same people. I dealt with patients who came from that oil spill who were affected by their allergies. What I'm asking is, why not look and compare the same tools we used in World War II with what we're doing now?
Well, I suppose there's somebody that's doing that.
By who?
Well, I can't tell you, sir.
It's an important subject.
I'm not arguing that, but my subject today is to talk about the oil spill.
So what can you do about the oil that's down there?
I'm not going to tell you because I don't know.
I want to answer what BP did in Cordova in 96 for that brown dust. They dug down with machines and $1 billion. I was there working in their hospital when it happened. And they removed all the oil. Mechanical.
No, they didn't.
The only way they're going to do it.
They did not get all the oil mechanical.
No, this was at the brown dust of the old railroad, the Copper River.
They got a lot of oil.
Yep.
But you can find oil in thousands of places down there.
Not in that brown dust. I'm just saying that was the type of technology that we had to use.
Well,
if you want to clean those beaches, you're going to have a big, major problem.
Why don't you come up and give the talk?
I'm just asking a question.
No, you're just interrupting everybody else.
How did the birds do their hand recovery?
Most of the birds did not do well. The eagles that came in, we had a release then about, I would say, the next spring. I believe there were somewhere around 8 birds that went down to Cordova. They were banded with bands so they could check them all out. And two of the eagles flew directly from Cordova to Kodiak, which was a pretty neat thing. You know, they tracked them and they went right back home. Now, eagles do a tremendous amount of traveling as far as what they do in the course of a year. So if they're going to feed on the salmon down in the inlet, they winter down in Haines, perhaps, which is a long ways from here, because in Haines, the rivers don't freeze all the way up. There are warm springs in the bottom of the rivers, and so there'll be open leads. And, of course, as the fish move through there, they're also on the tail end of their survival time, but it gives slow-moving fish and open leads for eagles to take fish from. So we didn't save very many eagles, and the reason for that is they couldn't find very many eagles. There were hundreds and hundreds of eagles that died during the spill, but as they would get oil on them, they couldn't fly, or if they could fly, it would be a very weak type thing. And so if there was any kind of forest between the beach and where their nesting area was, which there usually was some forest, many eagles died in that area. And there was no way for you to send teams out to wander along that margin of ocean and forest to try and find the eagles, because actually the pressure was on to try and stop the oil from doing, frankly, everything it did do. But anyway, the eagles didn't get to be they didn't have much of a fair shake at that particular point in time. There are other things that were considered more important at the time. But when we took those that survived after many, many washings of eagles are harder to get oil out of than seals, I think. I mean, than otters and seal-type creatures have different fur, but the feathers were a lot tougher than the fur. But in any case, when we went to Cordova to release those, they dispersed and went right back to home. Now, the oil has continued for all these years to be, it sort of surfaces in areas that are pretty much not habitated by humans, but there's still all kinds of animals that go along and feed in areas that are contaminated with oil slick situations. We still have problems with tankers and so forth that are not double-hulled. There's more double-hulls now than there used to be. So it's something that could easily happen again. And I don't know, I'm not trying to advise anyone for what they can do as individuals. I know that veterinarians are going to be real busy if that happens again. You have in your audience out here one of the best veterinarians that I've ever known, and his name is Todd Pommatier. He's in that tan coat. And I taught him judo when he was in the tadpole. But we have... my license is number 4. What's yours, Todd?
164.
Okay, so a little bit higher than mine. But we have a lot of really great veterinary care in Alaska now. And if we ever have another oil spill, we're going to need every bit of it, because it is just a terrible thing to try and stop. You can't wall it off. They put out big floating, I don't know what they call them, but they had absorbent material and floats to hold it. And it contains it pretty well until you start trying to handle high tides and a lot of wind problems where you get big waves that beat the beaches and so forth. Ma'am?
I was just wondering, do you have any, know of any research of, seeing that the oil that is in the food chain is now in the eagles and hawks or anything?
Well,
after these 20 years?
There hasn't been any research that I'm aware of. It's fairly logical that there would be some, because if the eagles take fish that are contaminated with the same kind of products that come from the breakdown of all these things that are out there kind of deep in the soil, I don't know what percentage or what level of problem there would be, but there's bound to be some. Any other questions?
Was it the dawn? Did you use the dawn with the birds too? I believe
yes.
That's when you were interrupted with. That was with the otters you were talking about.
We
that
used dawn for everything.
Okay.
And
what were the most amount of birds? You could find the eagles. What was it? Mainly ducks. And
there were ducks and swans and eagles and hawks and all the waterfowl, you know, and we didn't save many of those because they were so heavily contaminated. They'd come into you, and you could tell that it was a duck or something else, but they'd be a color of this gentleman's coat. There just wasn't much chance with that kind of situation. That's all I have to tell you, folks. Wish.
You had mentioned that the regulations for having wildlife has changed. How did that evolve since the time of the spill? Is that a health difference?
Basically, wildlife is protected by two really fine organizations. Fish and Wildlife, that's a state situation, and Fish and Wildlife, that's a national situation. But when I started, I told you that I was breaking the law when I started taking care of eagles and all kinds of critters that came into my office in the early 60s. And after the earthquake, I was called to give a talk with an eagle. And now all the time I'm breaking the law. I didn't know I was breaking the law, but I said, well, I have never had an eagle on my glove, but I'll give it a shot. So the long and short of the story was, I took the eagle to this meeting of Fish and Game, Fish and Wildlife. And in the long run, it's a longer story than I'm going to tell, but they gave me a permit that encompassed anything that walks, flies, or swam. and it was the only one in the world at the time. Now those are all broken apart, and so you get permits for birds, or you get permits for fish, or you get permits for whatever. You know, it's all separated. And that's a very good thing, because everybody's learned a lot about all different kinds of things, but you just can't be a pro on all different species. And?
Were the animals, like when you tried to handle them and stuff, were they, did they like try to get away from you?
They tried to handle you back with this.
You're probably pretty free.
They, well, this young lady sitting here works at the zoo, and she's learned to handle all different kinds of animals, but when she first came, it was a little spooky, wasn't it? But now she can handle muskox or beaver or whatever, and all of those things come with time, but you wind up with some scars. It's just, you know, what's the most dangerous part of an eagle if you get some kind of damage from an eagle? That's right. Most people think of beef. As long as you keep the head away from you, you're okay. But boy, if you have those talons, when they go in your arms, they meet in the middle. And I can show you scars. It takes a while to learn those things. And they carry a lot of bugs, too. Now, unfortunately, the bugs that we have today are a whole lot worse than the bugs that we had 20, 25, 30 years ago. So you have to really watch those things, because there is a lot of difficulty on what is going to clear up our world as far as the kind of bacteria that have evolved, because they're very good at changing things that used to kill them 25, 30 years ago, they use for breakfast nowadays. Any other questions? Sir?
When you're out on the beaches and they're picking up the animals and they're trying to wash them off, were they heating up water and did they have big baths? Or how did that
they work? Were sent into facilities where they had all these things set up, and they had, well, that I told you, the young veterinarian and one of the staff went down to do those kind of things too. But they had huge crews going around, and they'd gather up whatever, bring it in, and turn it over to the cleaning people, and they had them set up in different kinds of cleaning stations, because if you didn't, you just never got them clean.
And think about the logistics of when you're out there on the beaches and they have big water heaters that they're heating up water.
But they brought the animals and the birds back to a more central facility, and there were several of those around, and it was a nightmare. It was just a nightmare.
Were most of the people doing that like trained people or more weak people?
Well, everybody of any activity at all. When they started building the flight fins for the eagles that we still use today, we had volunteers from everywhere. We had from prostitutes to colonels. That's no joke. Three of the hardest working people we had were prostitutes. And they pounded nails day and night to get things up, because we had, you know, the hospitals in town were much fewer than there are today, animal hospitals, and they were loaded down with stuff. So we had to have bigger areas. But still, what's come out of that is all kinds of information on how to handle, God forbid, another spill, because we'll lose a lot of things then too. What the spills do is they don't just kill the animals that are up here. They kill the sound for a long period of time. There are bird species that aren't seen in the sound anymore. Now, they may be seen in other parts of the world, But they aren't seen down there because they were essentially wiped out and didn't have enough that didn't get exposed to the oil so they could recover and maintain a population in the sound. So, if you get a bunch of oil on you, remember Dawn.